News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Just having a good old time in here. With Mobile Mornings at 8:07, text us if you like, 251-343-0106. Also, obviously, if you just like to be part of the show and talk to us about an issue, feel free. Again, 251-343-0106. We will be talking Senior Bowl at the bottom of the hour.
Yeah, Executive Director of the Panini Senior Bowl, Drew Fabiano, will join us then. But several things we want to get to before then, including whatever it is you'd like to talk about this morning on the text line. I do want to talk about, Garland Gudger had an interview last week with Right Side Radio and kind of laid out what he's expecting for this upcoming legislative session in Montgomery, which will be starting here in just about a month and a half in January. So we'll get into that. And also, I think the big story this week, well, on two fronts, actually three fronts, if I had to go ahead and predict, and it's not much of a prediction, it just seems like this will be the discussion. Whatever's going to go on in Venezuela this week, we had the exercises begin yesterday with the 22nd Marine Expeditionary Unit and the islands of Trinidad and Tobago. Began running these joint military drills just miles off of Venezuela's coast. They said this will be 5 days of exercises that will expand in the coming weeks. But day two of those now is the president, I guess, continues to decide whether or not he wants to launch a strike on the inside of Venezuela.
Yeah, on the interior. And he had a real quick, you may have heard this over the weekend, but he was talking about now having conversations with Maduro.
Yeah, about the oil supplies. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure exactly if he'll work out some deal where we get the rights to their oil or how exactly that would work and allow Maduro to stay in charge. But it does seem there were some conversations going on behind the scenes.
So he was reacting to all of that here with reporters maybe yesterday or Saturday.
We may be having some discussions with Maduro, and we'll see how that turns out. They would like to talk.
Mm-hmm. So again, two things at one time, right? Applying the pressure and at the same time floating the idea that maybe we'll be able to talk a lot of this out.
Yeah, and we'll see, I guess, where that goes. I feel like we'll have more information this week on what the plan is. You also have, is it MBS coming into town? And a lot of Middle East talk this week. Israel yesterday, Benjamin Netanyahu specifically said they are in no way endorsing any sort of Palestinian state, which is going to maybe hang up some talks about not just the ceasefire in Gaza between Israel and Hamas, but also Trump's trying to expand the Abraham Accords. And that's a big part of what he's trying to do this week with MBS coming into town. But the Epstein files, I think, are just going to take the oxygen out of every single other thing, especially with Trump's big back and forth with Marjorie Taylor Greene this weekend. He called her Marjorie Traitor Greene in a Truth Social post.
Yeah.
But then after Greene and Thomas Massie did some show interviews this weekend, some of the big national media shows, Trump really changed his tune late last night on Truth Social about what he does or doesn't want to happen with the Epstein vote that's coming up tomorrow. He's now urging House Republicans to vote to release all of the Epstein-related files. Last night on Truth Social, the president hopped on and said the GOP has, quote, nothing to hide. He accused Democrats of using the issue to distract from the success that Republicans are having.
Mm-hmm.
The House will vote tomorrow on a measure forcing the Justice Department to publicly release all case materials. And it looks like that move will proceed despite the objections of GOP leadership. The bill would still require Senate passage and Trump's signature. Last week, the House Oversight Committee released more than 20,000 pages of documents from Epstein's estate. And that came right after the Democrats released just one email, and it had Trump implicated in it, not really implicated in any sexual crimes, but just the mention of him in Epstein's orbit or having Epstein mention him. But it blacked out the name of the victim, and the name of that victim was Virginia Jeffrey, who had already testified and said that Trump did nothing as far as she was concerned.
Yeah, some of those women actually, Marjorie Taylor Greene was talking, among the things she said is she's met with a lot of these women, and some actually have voted for Trump.
Mm.
So that would imply, obviously, that to their knowledge, he was not in the wrong. So exactly what's going on here?
Yeah, so the Democrats dropped that email right as the government was reopening, I think, as kind of a buffer of sorts to keep some of the heat off of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then the House Oversight Committee released 20,000 pages, and people have been poring over that ever since. Trump dismissed claims that he was involved. He said he's ordered the DOJ and FBI to investigate Epstein's ties to figures including Bill Clinton, I believe Larry Summers, and major financial institutions. He did that on Friday night. Now, posting yesterday, Trump said he doesn't care what Congress obtains legally, but warned Republicans not to be, quote, used, and to stay focused on the party's achievements.
It wasn't just the appearance by people like Marjorie Taylor Greene on CNN and Massey on ABC, but I think you're right. It's what they had to say. And it seems to me that, like, this statement from Massey right here on ABC over the weekend pretty much indicated that they had the votes on the Republican side. Listen.
I think we could have a deluge of Republicans. There could be 100 or more. I'm hoping to get a veto-proof majority on this legislation when it comes up for a vote. And, you know, the president's been saying this is a hoax. He's been saying that for months. Well, he's just now decided to investigate a hoax if it's a hoax. And I have another concern about these investigations that he's announced. If they have ongoing investigations in certain areas, those documents can't be released. So this might be a big smokescreen, these investigations, to open a bunch of them to as a last-ditch effort to prevent the release of the Epstein files.
Thomas Massey, often a no-go when it comes to toeing the line for Trump.
Yes, and Trump's gone back and forth with him over the years. But really, this beef he has now with Marjorie Taylor Greene, I mean, he completely withdrew his endorsement of her late last week, and that preceded her being on CNN and other shows over the weekend. And Greene yesterday, so as far as these Epstein files, she said what so many that don't have the national voice that she does have been wondering, questioned whether Israel or another foreign government is what's pressuring the president to keep the Epstein files under wraps. She cited those recently released Oversight Committee emails that, among others, link Epstein to former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak. On that CNN interview, Green said many Americans are asking if foreign influence is behind Trump's reluctance to release the documents, a dispute she says is at the heart of their feud. She also insisted she still supports Trump, but is going to continue criticizing him. And she's saying what a lot of other MAGA voters have been saying, that he's too focused on international issues. She's upset that he hosted Syrian President Ahmad al-Shara, the former al-Qaeda operative. Yep. And that was the day before Veterans Day, as a reminder, and his support for H-1B visas and traveling abroad instead of prioritizing domestic concerns. Trump withdrew his endorsement of Greene, accusing her of drifting far left. Greene said his remarks were hurtful, but hopes they can reconcile. But it doesn't sound like she's changed her tune a whole lot.
Doesn't she? She said that what Trump said has put her in danger.
I have something in my heart that I think is incredibly important for our country, and that is to end the toxic fighting in politics. And this has been going on for years, and it has divided our country, split up friends and families, neighbors, and it's not solving our problems. The most hurtful thing he said, which is absolutely untrue, is he called me a traitor, and that is so extremely wrong. And those are the types of words used that can radicalize people against me and put my life in danger.
Pretty good split going on right here, for
yeah.
sure.
And I haven't worked my way through all of the documents and probably never will, the 20,000 that were released by the House Oversight Committee last week. But, you know, from what I've seen, just regarding Epstein himself, it shows how, I mean, it makes it crystal clear kind of the connections that he had in so many different venues, whether it's, you know, international politics. Mm-hmm. He was reportedly assisting Russia in how to deal with Trump whenever they're negotiating with him. And how about during one of those committee hearings, he was basically feeding questions to the Democrats regarding Trump. And I need to find that exact story. But when they were...
Who was being questioned? congressional meeting, and they had a Republican in the hot seat.
So this was when all of the Epstein stuff was really starting to heat up a few years back, and they were holding these different hearings.
Yeah.
Right? Let me find the exact story that mentions this here, and I forget which it was. The it was the congresswoman representing the Virgin Islands. And side note, remember the big payouts to the Virgin Islands regarding the Epstein case? And was it one of the big banks had that he was banking with, Epstein, paid out this massive settlement to the U.S. Virgin Islands? And I was just thinking it'd be interesting to go and see where all of that money went.
Sure.
All of the money paid out to the Virgin Islands. But he was talking with, I mean, the elite of the elite, and had such a wide, I guess, he was so well known for so many different things. I think it's going to be really difficult to tell who was using him just for his political connections.
And who was using him otherwise.
And because who was using him for the...
He could be very influential in a lot of different ways, what you're saying, right?
Right.
So it would be advantageous to be in his company because, you know, even if he had no interest in doing anything nefarious with the young ladies, but this guy had a lot of sway in a lot of areas.
Yes, he did. I thought this was really interesting. So National Review, who certainly no big fan of Trump, if anything, they'd be kind of rhino adjacent or just straight up rhinos, according to a lot of MAGA people. And they wrote the editorial. I mean, this is from the editors, and they talk about this big email dump. They said, where there's smoke, there's sometimes just smoke. Democrats on the House Oversight Committee released new emails the other day from Epstein that caused an instant frenzy in Washington. Although they are more of what one would expect given what we know so far, they are embarrassing regarding President Trump's relationship with Epstein, but contain no smoking gun regarding any misconduct. And they kind of go through some of this. In one email to his former girlfriend and procurer, Ghislaine Maxwell, which is a whole other part of this story. You know, she's in the easier detention facility now and reportedly trying to make her way out with the help of Trump. But in that email to Maxwell, Epstein claims Trump spent hours at Epstein's home with a victim whose name Democrats conveniently redacted. We talked about this. The only reason to strike her name, Virginia Jeffrey, was that people might go back and see what she said about Trump. In a deposition, she said she never saw Trump and Epstein together and never saw him at Epstein's home and denied that he ever flirted with her. And, of course, she ended up, you know, committing suicide last year. And then she had this tell-all book that just recently came out. They continue in this editorial. She might not have been telling the truth. Jeffrey was not a reliable witness. But certainly there's no reason to accept the word of Epstein, a sociopathic liar, over hers. Said one way to read the email is that Epstein was floating the idea that it was Trump who blew the whistle on him to the police rather than suggesting Trump partook in his abuses. In another email to the journalist Michael Wolff, and so much of that document dump was just correspondence between the two of them, Wolff and Epstein. And Wolff was really trying to use Epstein to end Trump. He made that clear, and vice versa. Epstein had such a issue with Trump, maybe dating back to the big Mar-a-Lago blow-up.
He was using Wolff to help end Wolff.
Yeah. Yes. So in this email to Wolff, Epstein said that Trump, quote, knew about the girls. They write, a phrase that's gotten much play in the media. But the disgraced financier added, as he asked Ghislaine to stop, a reference to Maxwell. Said this is cryptic, but a very plausible interpretation is that it's confirmation of Trump's story that Epstein was recruiting girls from Mar-a-Lago and the future presidential candidate told him to stop. Then in a strange email to himself that was forwarded to Michael Wolff, Epstein says that girls, in exchange for payments, came to his house to give him massages that included a sex act. He says again that Trump spent time at his house, but that he never got a massage. I mean, these are emails from Epstein saying that. And then they kind of finish it here. They say, at the very least, none of this is a smoking gun. Yet Senator Chris Murphy, Democrat from Connecticut, is saying, quote, clearly Donald Trump was at the center of a child sex ring. They say, to be sure, Trump isn't taking any of this well. I think that's obvious as he's been lashing out at Marjorie Taylor Greene and others over this whole thing. For his critics, that constitutes Trump, quote, acting guilty. Say it's more like Trump acting like Trump. When has he not gone into overdrive to try to suppress or redefine an unwelcome narrative? It's not like him to concede that he might have done something untoward and express regret over it in order to make a more credible case that he isn't guilty of some alleged greater offense. And then they write, many prominent people, including Trump, had warm relationships with Epstein for years, a fact that does not reflect well on any of them.
Right, for sure.
there are so many important people involved in this, and who knows who were, other than Prince Andrew, taking part in the truly diabolical thing that has been accused of so many of these people. But it's hard to not believe that there are reasons, intelligence reasons, that they're not releasing this. And I think maybe embarrassment maybe part of it, that potentially you have some intelligence services maybe, that were caught up in the act here, or allied countries.
Right. Maybe beyond embarrassment. But, you know, embarrassed is one thing. But how would it shake down as far as politically or government to government, and how could really shake relationships between countries possibly? Yeah. I mean, it could be some, there could be a lot there beyond embarrassment. So now, if you missed it late last night, it had to be pretty late. Mm-hmm. Trump put out on Truth Social that
let it rip. Yeah, that's basically what he's saying. I guess my overall thoughts on this are, who the hell knows? I mean, we're getting drips and drabs, and then big chunks of information let out, like the House Oversight Committee did last week. But really, no smoking gun on anyone. And I don't know if we'll ever get that. I don't know, once they release these Justice Department files, how much more, whether it will close any books.
Yeah.
Will anyone, after this comes out, go, okay, now we know the whole story. Here's who's bad. Here's who's good. Here's what we do to fix it.
I doubt it.
I don't know.
I don't think it's going to be that conclusive. But has your mind changed on Trump since his social post last night? That's a fair question. Like, mm-hmm. How do you view Trump in all of this now, where he has relented finally after a weekend of words, fighting with Republicans like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Massey, mm-hmm. and now in the end he just relented and said, no, go ahead, release him.
Go ahead and release him. So they'll vote tomorrow. I've heard that maybe as many as 40 Republicans will vote to open it up, more than just the four that we've been focused on here recently, and that'd be Boebert, Mace, Greene, and Massey. I think a lot more will jump on and sign yes as far as them releasing the files.
Yeah, that's what Massey said before Trump has went ahead in reverse course on all that. Very interesting. 8:23, we might get around to the Democrats and ending the shutdown and behind the scenes on that. There's some pretty interesting information. Meanwhile, when it comes to real estate, I would strongly recommend finding somebody that you, someone with experience, someone you can trust. And you know where I land on that. Jason Wachter from Jason Homes and Daphne. He's a great guy, really a great guy. He knows real estate. When it comes to experience, Jason's got plenty. 30 years as a licensed broker, 20 years as a respected builder. If you're looking for sound advice and someone that will point you in the right direction when it comes to real estate matters, make Jason your choice. And this is important because his business has a construction division. If you've got an older property and you're in that kind of position, you're trying to sell it, but you'd like to upgrade it a bit, he's got the people, he's got all the materials to get that done, and he does it for plenty of clients. So reach out to him. Sometimes the burden of these situations feels overwhelming, but he's got the answers. Call your local real estate expert, Jason, 251-379-4444, or you can do this. Visit online, jasonhomes.com.
Getting your morning moving. Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Owig.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, 8:27 on Mobile Mornings. On a broadcast that appeared on PBS on Friday. Interesting. Punchbowl News senior congressional reporter Andrew DiSiderio said that so many Democrats felt like they were feeling so pressured by the far left wing, mm-hmm. that they didn't want to say it publicly, but they were over the shutdown, and a number of them approached. Was it Shaheen was in the middle? You know,
I believe so.
So they got to her before the weekend, and they said, "We know you've got eight, but eight's enough. But I'm behind you too. I'm behind you 100%. But in the end, listen to this reporter."
Senator Shaheen, who I just mentioned, who was leading this effort, she told us earlier this week that on Sunday, when they realized that they had the votes for this, more Democrats than just that eight came to her and said, I'm going to vote for this on the floor. And then just those eight senators from the Democratic side of the aisle ended up voting for it. And it ended up getting exactly 60 votes, right? So if there was another Democrat that peeled off, the entire deal would have collapsed. And nobody likes to be that 60th vote when you've got a deal like this, right? Because of the criticism you're going to get. I think the point that Senator Shaheen was underscoring was that so many of them felt, I don't know if bullied is the right word, but they felt like there was so much pressure from the left, from progressives, to hold the line such that so many of them who came to her earlier in the day and said, hey, we're going to actually have 12 to 15 Democrats supporting this, ended up peeling off by the time the vote happened and just barely got through.
They didn't want the criticism. They didn't want to be publicly criticized.
Yeah.
So they were like, okay, you got enough, that's good. Where earlier in the day, like, hey, we're all in with you.
Yeah.
No, they weren't.
Now they don't have to put their name on
exactly.
the line.
Exactly, yeah.
And, you know, Terry Sewell and Shamari Figgers both kind of keeping that same line. They shouldn't have shut it down or shouldn't have reopened the government. Jeff Poor was posting about Congressman Shamari Figgers and his take on this. He said, I think they are rightfully disappointed, referring to Democrats upset that the government reopened. At the end of the day, we took on this fight for more than 40 days to make health care more affordable, being one of the primary goals we had in this fight. To see us give in now at the end of the day is something that's incredibly frustrating. He said, we need big dogs right now. We don't need porch puppies as far as Democrat leadership.
Wow.
Have a traffic tip or your own take on the news? Text the guys at 251-343-0106 on Mobile Mornings.
834 FM Talk 106.5 in Mobile Mornings. We'll talk with Drew Fabianich, the executive director of the Panini Senior Bowl, here in just a minute. But first, time to head to McConnell Automotive and talk with Louie Arata. Hey, Louie.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Hey, we're doing just fine on this warm November morning. Tell us what you got going on out there at McConnell. I know a great selection of vehicles, and that continues whether you're looking for new or pre-owned.
That's right. Just want to thank everybody for coming in Saturday. Had a great day. Got a bunch of trades. We're trying to get those all ready, get them out front, and get them online. And like I said, we just had a great day Saturday. Mm-hmm. Hopefully to continue this all through the week. Got new cars coming in. I'm sitting here looking at a stack of brand new invoices on new Sierras, Terrains, Acadias, three-quarter ton pickups, Canyons. I mean, we're getting new cars in every day. So check everything out online at McConnellAutomotive.com. Don't forget those lower interest rates are out there now. We can help you out with that. And just come see us.
Yeah, I was going to mention the financing, but you brought it up on your own. You make it easy for the customer. And that's whether they're coming in to buy a vehicle, sell you a vehicle, or get their vehicle worked on, because the body shop, they do great work there too.
That's right. If you have that unfortunate accident, 251-476-4141, ask for Rachel. She will take care of all your needs. Back to, I promise you, from the insurance to set you up with a loaner vehicle from Enterprise or whoever they use back there. And it's a great deal back there.
All right. Thank you, Louie. Have a great week.
Thank you. You too.
Louie Arata, go see him. You'll find him at McConnell Automotive on Dauphin Street, just east of I-65, and the website, McConnellAutomotive.com.
Joined by Drew Fabianich, Executive Director of the Panini Senior Bowl, this morning on this Monday, after what a weekend of college football, Dalton.
It sure was. Many a close call for some top-ranked teams, and Bama fell at home, something you don't see, well, hardly ever.
Yeah.
And Oklahoma has made that a tendency this year, going on the road in the SEC and winning games while being outgained massively. And I think Alabama, Drew, basically doubled up Oklahoma on the yardage, but Sooners with some timely turnovers and take care of business to beat Bama. What a game on Saturday.
Yeah, it really truly was. And good morning, Dan Dalton.
Good morning.
You know, the thing is, you know, when you turn the ball over, the chances you have of winning a ball game and you know, we're slim and none. If you win a turnover battle, usually you win the game. I mean, that holds true in almost every level of football. You know, in the pick six and the turnovers, you know, with the fumble, I mean, great field position change. The block field goal was probably the difference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but again, Alabama's got to run the ball more effectively. They do. And Oklahoma is good on defense. They have been, and they will be as long as Brent Venables is around there. You know, so again, it's hard to win when you turn the ball over. It just is.
It's so weird too, seeing a Bama team that just doesn't have an absolutely loaded running back room. I mean, you have Jam Miller, and I'm sure some of these younger guys will come along nicely, but traditionally you're looking at two to maybe even three NFL running backs stacked behind each other. And then when any team isn't able to, you know, do one aspect of their offense, it just creates a chain of problems. Even if you have the best quarterback in the nation, sometimes it's hard to get past that when you're playing a good defense.
Well, and put it this way, when I coordinated defense, I love to put pressure on the quarterback, especially when I knew that they had to throw. I mean, that was the formula years back with Peyton Manning. I mean, that Indianapolis defense, you know, that when he played in Indianapolis was not very good. Because they were always playing from ahead. So, you know, the Freenies of the world, I mean, the Mathis, all those guys coming off the edge, well, they weren't very good at stopping the run, but they were real good at getting to the quarterback. And when you know they have to throw, it's an incredible advantage for a defensive coordinator.
Is it almost, and I don't want to, you know, start a pity party here, but is it almost unfair to the Alabama quarterback? He's been a star all year for sure, but just like that they have not figured out how, be it blocking scheme or whatever, or personnel in the backfield. Is it just too much is put on the shoulders of one guy?
It is. And, you know, just look at what's happened to Sawyer Robertson at Baylor. I mean, he's leading the nation in passing yardage. And, you know, and the problem is, you know, he's got to put up 40 points a weekend just to even come close to winning a ball game. Because they can't run it, they can't play defense. Mm. So, you know, and again, you're correct on, I mean, they do have a couple of good backs, but every time I went into Alabama, you know, when I was with the Cowboys, it was like, okay, who's the next guy? Because you knew there was going to be another one coming right behind that second or third round guy that they had. Sometimes they're first round guys. But, you know, and again, just the nature of the beast now with the transfer portal, a lot of those guys aren't sticking around, and they're not waiting their turn. It's like, you know, hey, I don't want to be here and wait, and I want my money now and everything else. It's just there's no patience, there's no development, and I don't know if that's the case with the Alabama running back, you know, crop or the room that they have, but I'd be willing to bet it has something to do with it.
Oh, they'll have a pretty good running back coming out of Jackson, Alabama here pretty soon.
So yeah, they will.
I'm sure they're waiting on Crowell to show up. But meanwhile, it was a great day for running backs all across the country.
Wasn't it, though?
I mean, you look at what Jeremiah Love did against Pitt in that top 25 game. I think Notre Dame and Georgia easily the most dominant wins in big games this weekend. But Love with 167 on the ground and a touchdown. But he wasn't even anywhere near the biggest stat line of the day. That came from Ahmad Hardy with Missouri, 300 yards rushing and 3 touchdowns against Mississippi State. There are some really good running backs out there.
There are. And, you know, he's an underclassman. Jeremiah Love, I mean, I'd love to have in our game. I'd love to have his backup in the game, to be quite honest with you. I think those are two of the best running backs in the country, and then in the same backfield, in the same room. So
how about you entice him by inviting his buddy first?
Why not just invite them both at the same
time? Sure, that's it.
There you go.
Yeah, I knew you'd have the correct answer.
Yeah, I mean, and hopefully, like I said, I don't know if they'll come out, but I'm pretty sure they will. So that invite will be later because we have to wait on the junior declaration, you know, for us to throw out invites on juniors, and that'll be like January 12th, if I remember right, is the declaration day for juniors. So
they cannot do it any sooner.
They can do it, but the problem is we can't invite them unless they're graduates.
Okay.
If they're a graduate and they declare in December, we can actually invite them.
Okay.
But if they're not a graduate, we have to wait for the January 12th.
Got it.
That's just the league rules. So there'll really be about 4 rounds of invites that we throw out there. There'll be one going out the 25th. And then there'll be another one going out in December, the ones that graduate that have declared. And then there'll be another one in January after January 12th. And then there'll be another one after that to kind of fill the roster because I don't have a clue how many of these juniors are coming out. I just don't.
Yeah. And I'm not sure how many of them know if they're coming out at this point.
Yeah.
Kind of look at the landscape.
Some of them do. Some of them are kind of, as we always said in scouting, some of them are no-brainers that they're first-round guys. Well, if they're first-round guys, they should come out. And we always used to say, if you're a first or second round guy, you need to come out. If you're a third round guy, you need to stay in or below. So, you know, and again, I don't know if the NIL landscape, the revenue share landscape holds some of those guys in a little bit more. I don't know. We're going to find out because, again, it used to be huge numbers of juniors that came out. I think more juniors are staying in because again, that's guaranteed money. When if they jump to the NFL, it's not guaranteed money because they're not guaranteed they're going to make a roster.
Team NFL franchises are being outbid by universities themselves?
Well, I don't think it's outbid. I think it's the value of the pick. Hmm. You know, you can make more staying in college as a sixth round pick than you can being a sixth round pick.
Hmm.
You know, because some of these guys are making more money at their university than they would be making as a sixth round pick.
Interesting.
So it's not outbid. It's because the whole pay structure is actually allocated by round and by number in that round in the NFL.
Mm-hmm. Talking with executive director of the Panini Senior Bowl, Drew Fabianich, and it was interesting looking at, you know, some of these games this weekend. Texas A&M, I mean, what a comeback. Down 30-3 at the half, and then four touchdowns without letting South Carolina even sniff the end zone again.
They almost came back in the third quarter alone,
yeah. And then you also had another close call with Ole Miss, even though they kind of stretched it out there at the end. But Florida was giving them a heck of a game, too. Meanwhile, you look at Georgia, and they are shining right now. As far as the top-ranked SEC teams, they look to have their act most together among any of them.
Yeah, they do. They're playing real complimentary football, and they're playing really good defense, and their offense is clicking now. It just keeps getting better each week. And they're running the football really well.
Yep.
And they're throwing it when they need to. And the play action works for them. And like I said, the defense is starting to really hum. And I think that's just because they had a lot of young guys that were, you know, playing, and they're starting to get used to it. Again, the more you play, the better you get. Huh? Isn't that funny how that works?
Yeah, it is. It is. We've seen it with Georgia, for sure. They were very young in the defensive backfield and all along the defense, and they were, you know, kind of porous early on, but they didn't look porous the other night. I've got a stat for you, Drew. I don't know if you're aware of this or not. You may be. Gunnar Stockton, the number of incompletions for Gunnar Stockton in the fourth quarter of all games this year.
Do not know that one.
Seven.
Wow.
He's thrown seven incompletions in all the fourth quarters combined. So it's seven, you know, out of how many passes, I'm not sure. But
I was going to say, how many passes?
They may be taking
the air out of the ball a little bit.
Yeah, no doubt. But still, when you think of somebody playing quarterback at a highly ranked school, you take, how many games are they in now? 10?
Mm-hmm.
And 10 games, 10 fourth quarters, 7 incompletions, less than one incompletion per game.
Yeah.
I mean, pretty remarkable.
I did not know.
That is a really, really impressive stat. And some good quarterbacks out there. We'll see. I mean, Mendoza with another big game for Indiana, and he's got them 11-0 now. So I really can't wait to see the crop that you're able to pull together for the Senior Bowl this year, because we're going to have some really, really great players down here. And all you have to do is look on a Sunday in the NFL, and so many of the names were just in the Senior Bowl either last year or the year prior. They're able to make really big differences for their teams really quickly, and all of us down here in Mobile get to see them up close and personal for a full week. It's great stuff, Drew, and I know you guys are getting closer and closer to sending those invites out here over the next month and a half.
We are. You better get your tickets, too, because, and again, I say this everywhere I speak, where can you go to watch more draftable players on a field at one place at one time?
That's it. Another thing, Drew, I want to compliment the television coverage of college football, which, of course, gets some people with a pitchfork in their hand, and they're because of what's going on with ESPN and Disney. I get all that. But that aside, something about the promotion of college football, maybe it's all the podcasts and all that stuff, too, but I think that we are seeing these prime players and these prime games on ABC, on ESPN, even on Fox. I don't know. There's something about the awareness of who these guys are that I think is probably as high as it's ever been as far as viewership. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it does. And I think it also has something to do with social media, too. Just because there's so many clips out there of big plays and great catches and everything else. And I'm sure that almost everybody's seen, you know, the Cooper catch at, you know, for Indiana Penn State.
Yeah.
You know, and in the past, it was like, hey, that's an ESPN top 10. You know, well, if you didn't watch it, you know, ESPN, you didn't see it.
Right.
You know, and now it's everywhere. And, you know, I mean, some of the things I get on my ex, I was like, really? I was like, I can't believe some of the things that are thrown at me, you know, but I think that's part of it. Now, again, I agree with the awareness, but I don't think these players actually watch football very much.
Mm. Yeah.
I think it's a very microwave type, you know, viewership now. I mean, we used to ask players like, hey, you know, who do you emulate or who do you watch? And you're surprised how many couldn't tell you. You know, they couldn't.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, you know, I really don't watch that much football. I was like, damn, really?
Yeah. Isn't that funny?
Yeah, that's always shocked me, too. And I had a cousin who played at Troy, or he was on the team at Troy. He didn't really play a whole lot. But, you know, my whole life was, a lot of my life was just watching football. I loved it so much. He's on this team. He couldn't give a rip. He didn't watch any football. He was just there to, you know.
He was there to be 6'6", 300 pounds.
That's exactly.
Recall,
yeah, 6'6", 360 is what he was sitting at. Yeah. So he was a big boy. Yeah. He did not get a Senior Bowl invite. Nowhere close. You guys, also, Drew, I want to point out the annual Turkey Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
Had it yesterday, and an absolute success. I love what you guys do for the community and donating the turkeys and the sides to folks who need it around here, but also getting some flag football played yesterday too. So really, really cool. I really love that you guys do that every year.
I do too. And I'll tell you what, I was so surprised when I rolled in at 7:30 yesterday morning. There was like 50 cars already lined up.
Mm.
I mean, you can tell that people are in need. I wish we had more to give. I mean, and if people want to give, I mean, go to Feed the Coast. Mm. I mean, yeah, because there's so many people in need. And I don't know how many we turned away because, I mean, we only had 1,000, you know, meals. So it was like, you know, it was too bad. We couldn't just keep providing for everybody we could. Plus, everybody that played in the game, I mean, all the kids that came up to the top, I mean, and, you know, got the awards and, you know, played in it, they seemed to enjoy being in that stadium. And I keep telling people this, too. I mean, that hadn't been there. Hancock Whitney's a great stadium, and there's not a bad seat in that house. There isn't. And we had a lot of people show up. A lot of teams that had multiple teams in there. I mean, multiple groups of cheerleaders, multiple ages. I mean, it was really a cool experience. For my first time through it, and I really enjoyed it. And I think the community really did too.
That's great, Drew. Well, congratulations. You enjoyed it, but the job was well done. And so that's a big part of what the Senior Bowl has always been all about. So glad that you can be a part of it now.
Yeah. Appreciate that.
All right, Drew, we appreciate your conversation every week. We'll check in next week and talk about some of the other big performances that are on the way. But SeniorBowl.com, that's where folks need to go, and go ahead and get your tickets because it's going to be a full crowd there at Hancock Whitney again in January.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
You got it.
Drew Fabianich, Executive Director of the Panini Senior Bowl. We'll come back, get through some of the texts that we can, and wrap it up for Mobile Mornings on this Monday morning.
Turn up your voice on the text line, 251-343-0106. Now, back to Mobile Mornings.
What is shaking, y'all? Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 854. Heading to the top of the hour, and a little after that, it'll be the Jeff Poore Show.
That's right. He's back. Jeff Poore, after their big 18-19 news gala on Friday night, Tucker Carlson was there, I guess, and accepting an award. So Jeff is back in action. Can't wait to hear how that all went. But on today's show, he'll have State Representative Shane Stringer on in hour number one. Dale Jackson from WVNN will join Jeff in hour two. And columnist Paul DeMarco set to join the Jeff Poore Show just after 11:30 this morning. Let's go to the text line. And Pat, congrats, Pat. He is currently tied for first place in the FM Talk 106.5 College Pick'em Pool. And again, I have people asking me to kneecap Sean because he's doing so well. Sean Sullivan, he just keeps winning his games that he picks. And I'm being asked by people to take him out behind the scenes, like make sure that he can't make his picks this next
well,
week.
Well, he's in two offices over. So.
I'm not going to do it.
Okay.
But Pat says, I went 9-1.
I can take over if you need 5 minutes.
Pat said, I went 9-1 this weekend. My average is getting pretty dang good. Do we
9-1?
Yeah, and he's tied for the lead. So keep it up, Pat. Got a couple more weeks to go.
Tied for the lead, and he goes 9-1.
Yeah. Not bad.
Wow.
Gary says, go Buckeyes. Bill says, the best move you could make for the Senior Bowl is to return the game to the North-South format. Even if the split is not geographically perfect. Well, it never was.
No.
It says, give us something to cheer for. The greatest Senior Bowls ever were played that way. I understand a lot of people's frustrations with that, and it did kind of seem like it was overreach on behalf of the Senior Bowl when they did that a few years back.
Almost because political correctness.
Political correctness, yeah, but I've never been, I don't know, I look at what team the guys I like are on and root for that team.
Yeah.
Or really, when it comes to the Senior Bowl, I'm just rooting for an awesome game and performances all the way around.
I remember oftentimes, too, like you were saying, geographically correct players for, when it was North-South, players for Southern California would be on the North team often. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, just the distribution of talent.
Just to even it up.
To even it out.
Yeah. But I completely understand where you're coming from. I think the actual game day atmosphere, for people who don't pay much attention to the players as recruits or anything like that, they're just looking for who to root for. And when you have a team called the South, yeah, it's going to get a bigger pop in the stadium than a team called, you know, American or yeah, National or whatever
That's a fair point.
So well noted, Bill. Butterknife, so this Epstein thing, I mean, Butterknife, it's Butterknife trying to come after me personally. Listen, I don't know if I need to say I'm against child sex trafficking every single time we talk about Epstein, but apparently for Butterknife I do. I feel like that's a pretty obvious thing that I'm against what Epstein was doing. I don't know how elementary you have to be that you need me to say that every single time, but I know nothing. I mean, except for what gets released.
Well,
I'm on the same plane as everyone else. 20,000 document dump last week, and yeah. I go, okay, well, what do we know that's new? And then I see the people that dive into it, and they say, look, it says Trump is complicit. And then you have other people saying, actually, this takes Trump, Epstein's directly saying that Trump had nothing to do with the... I'm just trying to tell you what I know, and what I know is not much, but
it's probably
I'm
more than a lot of people. You're keeping tabs on it. So Butterknife is trying to say, like, you know, I he's just kind of, he's just goating you a little bit, trying to say, so you're for all that kind of? That's not what any of us are for.
How long have we been talking? I mean, it's been 5 years, 6 years we've been talking about this, and we've put many an hour into talking about the Epstein files here. But I'm not going to, every single time it comes up, say, and oh, by the way, I'm against what Epstein was doing, because that's pretty obvious. Rock and Roll Doctor, wouldn't Massey's bill, even if passed by the House, have to reach filibuster-proof 60 votes? I think they have the votes all the way through. That's what Trump...
That's the point. They've got the votes, and that's why Trump sent out that Truth Social post last night. Jeff's on the way next.